Hey, you're listening to Night Terrors. This is Ash from Horror Fix, joined tonight by Jim Chandler.
Hello.
And my lovely wife, Chanel Hamilton. Hello. So we had a big week, essentially because a lot of horror news in the news, and also a lot of stuff coming out of San Diego right now. So anything Comic-Con related, we're going to touch that tonight. And then the second hour, for those who stick around, we'll be broadcasting an interview with Heads, John Bristol. Head is the slasher puppet movie that is now on VOD. Actually, I loved it.
You did?
I absolutely loved it. It was pretty great. And John was a great guest. He's an old school horror guy. Talked a lot about 80s horror, its influences on Head, the puppet movie.
Sure.
Sort of what it meant to do a puppet movie such as this. It's a really good interview, and it's a lot of fun. So, you know, I beg people will stick around for the second hour because I think they're really going to enjoy it.
Yeah. And I heard that no puppets were injured in the making of this film.
No actual puppets.
Maybe some Fraggles.
Some Fraggles.
Right.
Maybe Muppet, but not a puppet.
Yeah, there was probably at least two or three Joanne fabrics that were ransacked during the making, but that was it. That's the only fatalities. So we've got a lot to discuss tonight, especially in this first hour, because a lot has dropped this week. Not only in the immediate horrorverse, but sort of in the geekosphere.
Yep.
Now that San Diego is just, man, so much is coming out of Comic-Con. Everything does every year because that really is the showcase.
That's right.
I mean, San Diego, that is the forum. And we've had some pretty cool stuff that has direct relevance to horror happen in the last past week. So we'll go through some of the trailers that dropped, some of the news that's coming out of San Diego Comic-Con right now. A lot of good stuff. What we can do is we can go ahead, let those people who are visiting Horror Fix and give them a scoop on what we've been looking at over the last past week. So we've got some pretty cool news stories tonight, aside from the stuff coming out directly from San Diego. So a lot is going on. We've had some reviews this week for those of you who have been looking forward to, for example, the Larry Cohen documentary.
King Cohen?
King Cohen. We have had a reader that saw a screener of that, has reported on it. Says it was excellent, actually.
Okay.
As far as a documentary and a direct horror-related documentary, he gave it a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, for those of us that still want to see it, want to see it in the theater, I believe tomorrow it is hitting theaters. Its theatrical debut was tomorrow.
Give Mission Impossible a run for its money.
That would be great to see the two of them actually go head-to-head. It's like, you know,
comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. A surprise dark horse, King Cohen, second right under the new Mission Impossible. New York Times ran a pretty cool story. I don't know if any of you actually caught this, where they were asking a lot of genre authors what they thought the scariest book was. And there was one that kept coming up. And it was a book that sort of hasn't even been on my radar for years. A book that I read, I would say probably in high school and then read it again when I was in college and haven't really thought about it much since. A lot of authors said that the scariest book they had read, the one that kept them up at night, the one that had them looking over their shoulder, was The Haunting of Hill House, the Shirley Jackson book.
Yeah.
Now, have you read the book?
I haven't read that.
From what I remember, anyways, we're talking 20 years ago at this point, probably the last time I read it. It was pretty great. But the New York Times, I mean, they look towards authors such as Neil Gaiman and quite a few others. And it was pretty unanimous for the most part.
Yeah.
People did reference Stephen King's It, of course, as being one of the scarier novels. But amongst the authors, it was Shirley Jackson's Haunting of Hill House.
That's great that it's actually an older book that's actually still influencing people, or people are talking about it still.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Do you remember much about the book or the movie?
I don't.
I
remember much about it.
You know, they've had, I think it was, they've had two incarnations of the movie, of the book, right, based on the movie?
I think so.
Because there was a latter one.
The book based on the movie? Neither of us have seen or read any of this, so.
And that's why she is here.
There's been two incarnations of the book as movies.
Incarnations of the movie based on the book.
Now,
as movies based on the
book. What was the first incarnation? Which was in the 60s, correct?
I think so.
And that was what?
I'm checking.
We're supposed to be experts.
Right.
That's not fast enough. You're at the IMDb, right?
Well, the original was, of course, The Haunting.
Okay, right, yes.
Right. Because it's... I just
isn't,
want to stop
isn't
the show
the Haunting,
right now.
Isn't The Haunting, that's the first movie with breathing doors.
Right,
is that
correct.
Like 63, 64, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, it had to have been in early mid-60s.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was one, I think in 99? Was it 99 that we saw the Catherine Zeta-Jones... Liam Neeson updated Haunting.
That's right.
Which I actually saw in the theater.
1999, yeah. And The Haunting was, the original was 63.
63, okay.
Yeah, so right.
Yeah, I remember seeing the 99 Haunting in the theater and thinking to myself, man, does Owen Wilson's nose look like a penis? It looked just like a penis. I mean, I don't know if it's changed since then, or if it's just that we've seen it so many times now. Right. That it looks less directly like a penis, but I remember I remember watching The Haunting, going, I'm uncomfortable. Like,
did you forget to watch the movie then?
I was uncomfortable through the better part of the 2-hour running time because of Owen Wilson's nose.
Yeah.
Now none of the other Wilsons, at least we know, Luke Wilson doesn't
Luke
have
Wilson
the
has
no
a nice
the,
nose.
The penis nose, right?
Yeah.
No, his nose is fine.
Right, and I like Owen Wilson as an actor. Like I honestly
right.
do. And like I said, I think I could watch something now.
Is it right? Yeah.
It's very intrusive. It's a very intrusive nose when I think about it. Like I said, today I could watch an Owen Wilson movie and I'd be fine with it.
Unless it was in 3D. And then you
oh,
might
no. Yeah, we can't.
Can't do that. Can't even
no,
think about
no,
that.
That's practically a sex crime. So in 99, however, like it was a full frontal assault by Wilson's nose. But the 63 Haunting, I actually do consider a masterpiece.
That's a great
the
movie.
63 Haunting is a great movie.
I haven't seen that in years.
I didn't, as much flack as the 99 version got, I didn't mind it all that much either, actually. I thought it was still a good exercise in a haunted house movie.
Now, is Legend of Hell House based on somewhat on the book Legend of Hill House? I don't know. I have not read the book, so I don't know.
No, actually, Legend of Hill House is based off of a Richard Matheson story.
Oh, okay.
Which I love, Legend of Hell House.
Yes.
Actually.
Roddy McDowell.
God, it was such a great movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roddy McDowell and, oh, who was the female lead in that?
It's been so long since I've seen it.
God, Jim is dropping the ball.
I'm dropping the ball.
I looked to use my number two, Jim.
I am. This is why I'm number two. Legend of Hell House. All right. Yeah, Roddy McDowell. It was Gail Honeycutt.
Okay. Now, we also had a couple other things. Again, this is a big, big week for trailers.
Yep.
So, something that didn't come directly out of Comic-Con, but obviously hit the internet, a lot of people were talking about it, is the trailer for the Purge series.
Yes.
After the first Purge, did fairly well. I mean, the Purge movies, for the most part, make quite a bit of money. The franchises made quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, as a horror thriller, the series isn't extremely effects-heavy.
Right.
So they keep a fairly reasonable budget,
mm-hmm.
and they do make quite a bit of bank
off
of the Purge films. So airing September 4th on USA Network, we are getting 10 hour-long episodes of the Purge series.
Wow.
And the trailer, I mean, the trailer definitely looks purgy.
Purge-esque.
It looks like the films. I think the spirit is still there. And she didn't fucking do anything.
She showed up. She is here.
My wife just grabbed a mic. As much as we kept...
actually shoved it in my hand.
As much as we... well, deja vu.
Just
like our wedding
night.
Oh, wow.
Oh, zing. So let's go ahead and move into...
wow.
Some of the things that did actually come out of Comic-Con.
All right.
One thing that is relegated almost strictly to comic books... but does have some relevance to the world of horror, is, you know, James Wan's Aquaman.
Yeah.
So there's another instance of big Hollywood plucking a fairly well-known horror director
mm-hmm.
to do a tentpole film.
Yeah.
It has not been the first time.
Right.
But they've had pretty good luck with taking horror directors. Sam Raimi, for instance. We want to talk about tentpole franchises.
Yeah.
You know, Sam Raimi being a horror director. I mean, here's you know, the Evil Dead Sam Raimi, and yet this is the guy that they gave the Spider-Man franchise to.
Right.
And even the Wizard of Oz franchise to.
That's right.
I mean, as far as big, big budget films, you know, Raimi's taken the reins over A-list tentpole franchises.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what James Wan does, which Wan has a great horror track record.
Yeah.
He really does. I mean, the originator of the Saw franchise.
That's right.
For the most part. I need that rim shot audio.
But I just,
like, I really, really need the rim shot audio. But we did watch the trailer, so we had talked about the trailer a little bit. So what was everybody's initial thoughts on the Aquaman trailer after watching it?
I thought,
very busy.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in a short period of time, and it's kind of hard to... I mean, you can kind of follow what it might be about, but it's I don't know. I mean, that's...
It seems like there's a lot that's going to happen in the movie, just from the trailer. Like, it's going to be a whole lot of going on.
It does seem to be a little off tonally.
Yeah.
For me. Because we are trying to make Aquaman... obviously, he's the more grittier, visualized idea of what Aquaman is. Mm-hmm.
And now he's got some, comedy to him now.
That was what felt the most off for me.
Yeah.
I kind of think they tried to give him a little bit of a biker angle, you know, that kind of...
I felt that in the first movie that he was in when we first saw him. And now in this, in the trailer, it's just like, oh, he's, cracking a joke here and there. Mm-hmm. Look, he's sarcastic. Haha, that's not what we were looking for.
Well, strangely enough, by watching the trailer, it appears as though they've modeled the Aquaman persona, at least cinematically, after Swayze's character in Point Break.
There you go. Yeah,
they
see that.
They seem very similar.
I see that.
They really do. And I think they're trying to, because he is, Aquaman.
Right.
He's the heir to Atlantis. That I think that they are trying to give him the surfer dude
right.
sort of vibe. I mean, we saw that a little bit in Justice League, where they're trying to insert that surfer dude kind of thing, which also leads me to believe that DC, for the most part, is a little out of touch with their films.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they're still struggling with that, taking their icons and translating it to a new audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're still maybe 20 years off. Like, it seems like this would have been great as a 90s trailer.
Right.
Like, as a 90s trailer, man, Aquaman works as a 90s movie. I don't know if their Aquaman works as a 2018-2019 film.
Right.
That being said, and we can go ahead and get off track for a second, and if we're looking at just super movies, we want to make that kind of contrast and what works and what doesn't work. The Shazam trailer I thought was great.
I did too. I thought that was fantastic.
And they seem to get it.
Yeah.
Like, that humor actually seems to work in the Shazam trailer a lot more than it works in the Aquaman trailer.
Yeah.
And I also think visually, God, some of the underwater stuff for Aquaman looks great. As soon as we take that out of the water, it gets a little lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the shots of, Amber Heard and the really bright, vibrant red hair underwater.
Right.
But as soon as she's on land, all these characters start to look a little goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate saying that because they do look very similar to their comic book counterparts.
Right.
And I like that there's that attention to detail there. But it really is, and I hate to say it, but it is sort of a fish out of water kind of thing. As soon as we get the fish out of the water, it flops and flails and doesn't necessarily work.
Now, the thing I worry about is it could lean towards a Green Lantern type of thing. Because you can make a good trailer, out of 2 hours of footage or hour and a half. And
right.
So you don't know. I mean, is this going to be a good movie? I mean,
well, I think it's going to actually make good money.
Oh, it'll make good money.
It'll actually kill for a couple of reasons because, it's a superhero movie, so there's going to be a lot of people going out to see it. But then there's also all of us women that really, really
it
love.
It does. So that's the aspect that's getting lost on Gemini.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a thing that, you like big tits. So do you.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
So, but he's,
One time
Drogo,
I didn't include.
Drogo and Lee Love
I didn't close my browsing history. I didn't clear my browsing history once. 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 Maybe three or four times in a row. And now it's my whole life is governed by my love of Big Tits. My entire life. All my achievements squashed.
Yeah.
Because of Big Tits.
Isn't that just a given?
And I thought it was going to be a good idea to have my wife on the show. One and yet another series of mistakes that I've made.
I think the reason she's here
all
is
coming that, back to haunt me.
That no matter what direction we're going in, you never know where she's going to take it with one comment.
No, right,
because here we are.
If there's an angle that can belittle me, that's where my money. That's where I put my money.
Right.
Right there.
My money.
See? Right there.
Exactly. Once again.
Right. The point of this show is that I need at least an hour out of the week to feel absolutely powerless.
There you go. And this is your hour.
So, moving right along. No, I agree with what you're saying, too, when we're talking about stuff like Green Lantern. And strangely enough, visually, this is what kind of bothers me about the Aquaman trailer.
Right.
It reminds me a lot as far as the same color palettes.
Yes.
And that same... I mean, because a lot of Green Lantern took place in space, Aquaman obviously taking place in the water, and I think the comparison's going to get drawn is that everything seems to have that weightless quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a weird medium to try to translate.
Yeah.
The idea of having the superheroes fight in space and the idea of having superheroes fight underwater, it's like you've got to get that right.
Yeah.
And I like some of what I saw. There are some parts of the trailer that I thought were, like I said, it's goofy. Like, it just, I don't know if it's going to work in context or when we watch it. You know, take it out of a two-hour movie, maybe put it back in that 2 hours, and contextually it's going to work. But the trailer didn't have a lot of those oh shit moments for me
right.
that I want out of something like that.
And the first trailer should have something like that. Something.
It should. I mean, even like the sharks in the aquarium, I almost feel that, okay, I got that feeling that this was a movie that was shot so specifically for 3D that on a 2D screen, everything looked too, yeah, it looks
like
too, it looks separated. Everything, yep. As far as the effect shots.
Was that shark not Bruce from Nemo?
Everything looked a little unreal.
It's kind of like the 3D movies from the 50s, where you know they have to send something at you, and if you see a 2D version of a 3D movie from the 50s or the 60s, they use those gimmick kind of 3D effects, and it kind of looked like sharks.
Yeah,
I thought.
And something else is, I saw some earlier test footage from Aquaman, and strangely enough, the test footage looked better.
Okay.
The test footage that I saw was a little more grainy,
uh-huh.
and a little darker. And looked more like what we would expect to see underwater.
Yeah.
Now then, we're also about 9 months out, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe the look of that will change. Maybe if they get feedback.
Maybe somebody will have a sexual harassment suit, and they'll have to change everything.
Shit. Drop
their name on the credits.
Oh, yeah.
Right. What have we been allowed to have?
Somebody will have an ex-girlfriend from 20 years ago that will say he was mean once to me.
Well, we'll find something out about somebody having some kind of relationship with an underwater mammal.
Ooh, right. Yes, like a dolphin.
Yeah. And then suddenly we can't even show dolphins anymore.
Did
yep. Suddenly we can't show dolphins anymore.
That's right.
Flipper gone.
Of course, we also have to take into account that this is the San Diego Comic-Con.
That's right.
Some trailers do get put together hastily.
Yeah.
Just so that they're premiering at the San Diego Comic-Con. And this is, I don't think it's the case because they've been in production on this for a while.
Yeah.
So I think by now we probably could have had a trailer. In fact, I think in this instance, they probably held out to premiere the trailer at Comic-Con.
Right.
And it could end up being great because I do think Juan is a very capable director.
Yep.
He's kickstarted some franchises.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if there's somebody that's competent enough to come in and take the helm and do it, it probably is James Wan. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not convinced by the trailer.
No. I kind of wonder if they get feedback from this. A lot of people start saying, hey, it looks like Green Lantern. I wonder if that that look of that will change and go back to a grittier, you know, I don't know.
Why don't you tweet at him just directly? Hey,
just
Juan.
Tweet it.
Right, yeah.
Green Lantern trailer.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that would go over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, talking about trailers that did hit, besides, like I said, I did like the Shazam trailer.
Shazam felt very like the movie Big.
It's like Big with superheroes,
yeah.
Right?
It was fantastic. Yeah.
And, you know, I'll take that.
I will, too.
Like, to me, I'm like, okay, that's a win.
I love Big.
It's better than just remaking Big.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if Big had an element that might surprise me, if they were to redo it.
Superheroes.
Yeah.
Shazam.
Put a fucking superhero. Put Shazam in it.
Right.
Billy that's Batson. Like the only thing that could maybe elevate Big. So maybe they've got it. Maybe they cracked the code. This is how to do it. Anyways, that trailer felt great. Really impressed by the trailer for Glass.
Absolutely.
And we're looking at two separate entities within the Shyamalana Ding Dong. Shyamalama Ding Dong universe coming together. One of which, Unbreakable, that... Unbreakable was 2000. We thought it was an even younger film when we were trying to figure out what years it was been made. We were talking before we started recording. So that's a 20 years practically in the making that we're getting the sequel to Unbreakable. And I love the fact that he was able to take two of his films and make a direct sequel to both in one film.
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable because we don't really see that often. But I think it does lend itself to the idea that studios are looking at world building more so than they ever have.
Yeah.
Because look how well it's worked for Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
Again, then we do have to look at DC. DC needs a win, undoubtedly. You know, going back, document, they need a win.
Right.
Otherwise, they're just waiting for Wonder Woman 2.
That's right.
You know, which really has been, critically, their only real success with this universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, what about the Christian Bale? Is that still considered part of the same universe, the three Christian Bale movies?
Actually not considered part of the new DC cinematic universe.
Too early. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So we're looking at, Man of Steel.
Right.
I'm just going to belch in front of the microphone as much as I possibly can. That way you know it's my pop filter and not yours, Jim, is by the smell. It's like, why does it smell like a beef stick? It was Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Batman versus Superman,
right?
Wonder Woman, and Justice League. I'm not missing anything, right? Mm-mm. So those are considered the canon. Well, Suicide Squad.
Okay, right.
So those are the five. Those are considered the canon. Critically, the only one that really gained any traction with critics was Wonder Woman.
Right.
That was it. Critics did not like Justice League.
No.
They did not like Batman versus Superman. Now, they were lukewarm on Man of Steel.
Right.
But it was rated a little bit better than the movies that followed it. Suicide Squad did not get good ratings. So we're really looking at the, as far as replayable, with longevity, worked with the critics, it's been Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So they need that win.
And how long can a studio like this make movies like that and not critically have a win? I mean, if they're still making, I mean, how much do you have to make? Double your money? You got to be making more than that in order to make it financially feasible, correct?
Well, especially for big films like this, because as far as the dollar spent on marketing, that's something that's a little more like ethereal and amorphic.
Yeah.
They're not really for sure what some of those receipts are, because these are things where the genesis of the marketing campaign might have been 2 years. Before the film actually comes back, it actually hits theaters, and and at least a solid year for a lot of these bigger films.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about needing a win, to tell you the truth, Bruce Willis sort of needs a win.
Uh-huh.
Even though he's still a huge actor, still a well-known actor, he's been doing a lot of VOD, almost practically straight-to-video stuff. As far as theatrical, he did have Death Wish, which I didn't mind. But as far as, again, being a big Hollywood movie, this is Bruce Willis, unfortunately, has not translated well.
Yeah.
10 years ago,
still
enormous, still a huge superstar. But I think what we're seeing is that nobody knows what to do with old Bruce Willis.
Well, now just this week he came out and pissed a bunch of people off for saying that one movie was indeed not a Christmas movie.
You know,
what's it called?
Die Hard.
Die Hard, right. Saying that it was not a Christmas movie. Was.
Yeah.
Die Hard is a staple of Christmas films.
That's right.
You know, there's the Island of Misfit Toys.
Yep.
Right.
There's Heat Miser and Cold Miser.
Yep.
That's right.
And then there's John McTiernan's Die Hard.
And Gremlins.
Oh, you got to put Gremlins in there.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
The Thing is actually a Christmas movie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like
first week of winter.
Oh, yeah. You got to watch The Thing around Christmas. Mm-hmm. But I think Bruce Willis at this point, he needs a movie that's able to transition him from what he was 10 years ago to what he is now.
Mm-hmm.
And but a formidable actor that is aging into roles. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing them take his characters and try to age them in order to have Bruce Willis be in a film. Like Death Wish.
Right.
Death Wish is the equivalent of saying, let's make a story where we can age a Bruce Willis character to include Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Well, actually, what was Charles Bronson's age when he did Death Wish? I mean, he always looked older than he was, but he wasn't a young guy when he did Death Wish.
No.
I could see him sliding Bruce Willis into that.
Well, I think, I mean, what was the first Death Wish?
1974, I think.
So, what would Charles Bronson have been? What, late 40s?
Yeah, had to be.
Yeah, but we're still seeing, I mean, Bruce Willis is 60 what?
He's probably about 61, 62, something like that.
So, there's still a significant, even if it's a decade.
Right.
Sometimes that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did anybody, I mean, she and I watched Death Wish together.
Okay.
Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet. I've seen the original.
Yeah, we watched it together.
Did I fall asleep?
Oh, yeah.
Did I fall asleep?
Most certainly. The good thing is that we're hoping we can actually get her through an entire podcast that she's in.
Uh-huh.
I guarantee. She's 63, by the way.
That she's actually participating in that she won't fall asleep during.
Right.
Yeah. And there she goes.
So 63. So that's not bad. But, you know, Clint Eastwood, he's going to be, what, 90 in 2020?
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, and he started going into more directing, but he was still doing movies. So, I mean, I'm sure there's time for Bruce Willis to be in other movies, but I think they try to stick him in an action film.
And I think that's the problem is that they're not realizing that there's other genres. I mean, quite simply, I think he's an actor that can transition, but I don't think anybody knows how or really what to do with him yet.
Well, they don't need to transition Clint Eastwood. He's a clone of himself.
Right.
Oh, yeah, true.
Right, right.
Yeah,
Scott
Eastwood
exactly.
is basically just somebody took a couple of, like, skin cells, and there was a lab, and all I know is...
There's a sheep.
Also heard that Scott Eastwood cannot spend more than 90 minutes in direct sunlight.
Right.
So, unfortunately, he's got that going
right,
for him.
Right.
We've had a lot of really cool stuff happen this week. Now, this is all stuff theatrical. Do we have anything coming out as far as video?
Yes. Do we want to hear what's coming out as far as from Comic-Con first, or do you want to hear just kind of what's coming up this past week? And maybe
let's go through the roster.
Through the roster.
Yeah, what's happening?
Okay. This week, there were several releases. In the Mouth of Madness, John Carpenter, Memoirs of
One of my favorites, actually.
Yeah, I really liked In the Mouth of Madness. I know a lot of people had a hard time with it when it came out originally.
I love Sam Neill.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. As an actor, I've always loved Sam Neill.
And also in the Carpenter Sam Neill movies, Memoirs of Invisible Man, which I always kind of liked it. It's not the hey, I'm going to watch
like
a Carpenter
forgotten
movie.
Carpenter film.
It's
like rattling off Carpenter's resume. That's the one that always gets left out.
Well, you know, and he came in. He didn't start directing that. I believe Ivan Reitman started directing it.
Yeah.
And then he quit or was fired, and then Carpenter came in and worked on it and did most of the directing. But
now, wasn't that also the time when everyone started coming out that Chevy Chase was an enormous asshole?
Yes.
Right. So there were production issues.
Right. Like Cops and Robbersons,
I think.
That were
around Chevy Chase, right?
Right.
I don't remember hearing anything about that.
Well, I think Chevy Chase... I think Chevy...
Yes. Yes, you did.
I think Chevy Chase.
It was that decade that you were just feeling a little sluggish.
Yeah. Well, I think Chevy Chase put money into the movie, so I think that's why he had some control over it. And then he had some differences with Carpenter and with Ivan Reitman. That may have been the reason Reitman's gone. But I think what happened was is Carpenter comes in, and I know they said there were supposedly rumors about them having problems, but later on, I guess Carpenter said he gets a Christmas card from him. So I don't know how much that really carries over.
I get a Christmas card from my mother, so that doesn't really say a whole lot.
Well, that's true. But the other thing that came up.
And of course, Carpenter's actually been known to be rather outspoken as well. So
yes, he has. Always.
So I'm sure if he still has problems with Chevy Chase,
he would
have absolutely no issue at all telling anyone who would listen.
Right. Yeah. If anybody wants to see anything about Carpenter, just go on YouTube and watch some of the Q&As. And he's not afraid to say anything. So
no.
So, which is something I like about
him. Rob Zombie issue that was going around for a while, actually, because of some remarks made by Carpenter.
Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, where he comes from, and he's not saying I love everybody. He has opinions.
He shoots straight.
Yeah.
And he has no reason not to, considering he's one of the godfathers of horror for the most part.
Right, so. Exactly. And he's one of those guys where I always considered Carpenter. He's kind of like Lucas and Spielberg. They came around in De Palma. They came around that period where they were transitioning from old type of Hollywood into the new effects areas. And they had to bridge the effects and sort of bring everybody up to newer types of filmmaking. And you can kind of see that in their films, that they're both older type and new type together. And I was that's kind of why I like those directors in that era. But the other things that came out this week, Wolf Cop 2. And if Best Buy right now has a Blu-ray of Wolf Cop 1 and 2, so another Wolf Cop. So it's an exclusive for Best Buy.
It's a Wolf Pack.
A wolf. It is the Wolf Pack.
It's the Wolf Pack.
I can't wait to sit through that.
Oh, you can catch.
You made it all the way through the first Wolf Cop film.
I did. I think I was sitting on the most uncomfortable part of the couch.
She should do that again to make sure she.
Yeah, see exactly.
It. I can sit on this couch that I'm sitting on right now.
Yeah, I'll put it on. You can sit on the fucking floor. How's that sound?
Oh, I can fall sit on the floor.
Oh, Jesus Christ! Continue, Jim.
I'm sorry. Well, some of the things got announced. August 7th, Predator's coming out on UHD. So that's coming out. And back in 2010, they released a Blu-ray that got really bad reviews because they took all the grain out and made everybody look waxy in it. Mm. And so it's got to be a new remaster. It's a 4K disc, so it should have a new remaster. I'm sure they weren't doing that almost 10 years ago.
Right, yeah.
So, but there's also a 3-pack that's going to come out. It's going to be a 4K with Predator, Predator 2, and Predators. And it's going to have a Blu-ray in there as well as a 4K, so 6 discs. And it's UHD, Blu-ray, and it's also digital codes in there. And I think it's about 40-something on Amazon, so it's priced well. September 11th, Christine's coming out in 4K, UHD.
Nice.
Along with, it's going to have Dolby Atmos, a version of that. So Dolby True HD and 7.1. And something else that's been kind of, it's on Barnes & Noble and... Diabolic DVD is the new Halloween 4K UHD, and it's supposed to come out with a Blu-ray also and digital code. And Diabolic DVD right now has it for pre-order at $16.99, so that's cheap.
Nice.
And November 13th is Maniac. It's coming out in a 3-disc edition, Blu-ray, DVD, and CD soundtrack.
Oh, nice, nice.
But Comic-Con, as far as Comic-Con, the big, I guess, big news as far as physical media was Scream Factory. They had, I think, 14 titles.
Oh, wow.
And I'll give them to you real quick. Candyman Collector's Edition, November 20th. Looks like Critters Collection 1 through 4, 27th of November. That's a
Christmas, babe.
They come out November 27th, so it's a month in advance, so you can get it.
I just say the word Christmas whenever I need to bookmark a part of a conversation that might be relevant to Christmas gifts.
Hey,
so.
Jim, remind me.
Remind you? Okay. I'll put a star by that one.
Or draw a little tree.
There you go.
Beside it.
And that's a horrible tree. Oh, that'll work.
Can you draw, like, me flipping him off?
No, that'll take a little time.
Just draw an angry face. It's synonymous with my wife.
Okay.
Angry face. Grr. G-R-R-R-R-R-R.
Well, let's see. Also, 10 to Midnight, speaking of Charles Bronson, that's coming out early 2019. New transfer. Obsession is also coming out early 2019, the De Palma movie. The Craft is getting a new Blu-ray.
Nice. Did we get anything new with the Craft re-release?
They didn't list anything yet. It's too early for extras on that. I would
Speaking of outspoken, I love all the Fairuza Balk interviews.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, another person that doesn't pull a lot of punches. No.
That's, her interviews are great.
Yeah.
Saturday the 14th, which is I don't...
The day after Friday the 13th.
That's right. Richard Benjamin.
Look who did the math.
And December 2018, Dracula, Prince of Darkness. So it's a Hammer title.
Yeah. And
Hammer time.
I know it's a lot of people's favorite or near favorite for the Hammer titles, but I do love Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one at the end of the movie? Is that the one where the ice breaks open and he's going under the water, or which I don't remember which ending that was?
I actually believe that's Horror of Dracula.
Is that Horror of Dracula? Yeah. Okay.
No, it's not. You're right. It's Dracula, Prince of Darkness. Because Horror of Dracula is the more... is actually the Bram Stoker interpretation. So.
Okay. What's the one with the stained glass window at the end where they break the... Kind of like Fright Night, where he ends up getting burned by the sun and the... Do you remember?
God, I'm getting all my Hammer movies mixed up.
I need to go back and watch those. have Hammer time. But November 13th is Single White Female. December 2018, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. We need that. Got to have the sequel out. Yeah. November 6th is Sleepwalkers. December 2018.
I always thought it was underrated.
Sleepwalkers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of the 90s, that was 90s, late 90s.
Right, yeah. Well, it was also, there was a time when a lot of King adaptations took sort of a slump. Especially from a box office perspective.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Sleepwalkers fell into that slump.
I think about that time, I mean, there had been a lot of good Stephen King movies out in theaters. And I think about that time, towards about, was it 90, early 90s, like 92, 93, we had things that went to TV like Tommyknockers and It. And
right. It was 90.
And The Stand.
Right. The Stand, Tommyknockers, and then yes. We had some other stuff, Langoliers.
Yes.
And we had some stuff in the 90s. I mean, what was Lawnmower Man? When did that happen?
That was about mid-90s, I think.
So we had a lot of... First of all, they were lesser King adaptations.
Right, and Needful Things.
There was a lot of novellas. Mm-hmm. I think Needful Things, during that period, was actually one of the last bigger budget King adaptations that came out.
Yep.
And that was also when King stopped writing about Castle Rock.
Okay.
Because Needful Things was... technically the last Castle Rock book, at least at that point in time. So Needful Things, strangely enough, sort of marked the end of an era for a lot of King adaptations. And we had a lot of stuff, again, that were based off of short stories, and then loosely based off of short stories, some of his novellas. I mean, he's got such a full body of work that, again, you're going to find stuff that's still a little lesser known that they're going to be able to adapt. And, you know, Sleepwalkers obviously being... one of those.
Do you think maybe they just didn't spend the money or the time on those because, like, well, it's King, so we'll sell it, we'll put it out there, we'll just put a modest budget in and go, and maybe they just need to spend a little more time or pay a more, I don't remember who the director was in Sleepwalkers.
Mick Garris.
Mick Garris is a good director.
He's a good director, but he also did, TV Stephen King stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he probably approached the subject much like he would a TV film, like, what's our bang for the buck and how can we do it?
Well, that's true.
But I did actually really like Sleepwalkers, and I remember the opening for the Sleepwalkers being extremely memorable.
Okay.
And plus, it was an interesting movie, some incest and stuff going on there, and some very weird sexual themes of Sleepwalkers, but it was pretty cool.
Well, then something I'm excited about is Starman, December 2018.
She actually made... a pantomime of big tits.
Did she really?
Because I said that. Sex. That's all it's going to take.
That's all it takes.
Right, yeah.
But
continue.
December of 2018 is Starman. So that's what?
50, that's a big one for you, right?
It is. It's like, what, 34 years after the original? I mean, to the month. So, yeah, Starman is one of those movies
You've
where...
You've always spoken of Starman fondly.
Yeah.
Whenever you speak of Starman.
Well, I think it's the only Carpenter movie that was nominated for an Oscar. Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has a lot of good effects things for the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the effects stuff is really good.
It had a lot of emotional resonance, too.
Yeah, I think so. And it was the first... and that was a movie that they tried to get it made for a while. Mm-hmm. Executive producers Michael Douglas, and they tried to get... And they actually wanted... a large budget because of Close Encounters. They wanted a large budget for the ship. And Carpenter's idea was, look, I can tell you how to do your ship. The ship's not the story. And he basically took a surfboard, cut a hole in it, and put a circle or something in it and said, here's your ship. And that's more or less what they came out with. And that's, from what I understand, that's how he kind of got the job. I may be wrong on that, but that's what I'd heard. And, you know, they shot it in, Tennessee, a lot of it, and then out at the crater. And it's got good actors in it. And Carpenter always usually anchors a film with a good actor, like Richard Jekyll. He's the older actor that he anchored that movie with. You know, you got to put an older established actor and then sort of build your group around that. And it's just a good movie. And a lot of people miss it, I think, now. You know, when you talk about Carpenter and movies that don't get thought about, I think people like horror don't watch it, or people that saw it at the time really liked it. People now look at it and go, oh, it's a love story, I don't want to see that. And they don't see it. I think they're really missing out on something. It is one of the only Carpenter movies that doesn't have a Carpenter score. So it's Jack Nishi. He did the score for that. But it's a good movie if you get a chance to check it out in December 2018. And the last three I have here are Screamers, early 2019, and looks like November 20th, Urban Legend and Urban Legends. So
two movies I know next to nothing about.
I haven't seen
those. Were, I think, single-serving watches for me.
Yeah.
Although, now, Screamers is the Peter Weller pick, correct?
That's right.
Which I didn't mind. I didn't mind it that much. It had a lot of overtones of Richard Stanley's Hardware in it for me.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm a much bigger fan of Hardware, so it sort of paled in comparison. I'm not a fan of Richard Stanley in general. You know, we talk about Firouza Balk. It's like we got to talk about Island of Lost Souls. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, the Dr. Moreau,
yeah.
Which Stanley, that ill-fated production. But, yeah, so very cool things coming out of Comic-Con, obviously. Tons of really cool Scream Factory releases. They were always putting out some really good stuff. The Night of the Demons release, which has the Nika yeah. Angela doll in it, is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad pre-order. I think it's like $62 for the pre-order for that, which really isn't all that bad.
And once it comes out and sells out, those are going to go up. I mean, you know, the action figure, if you will probably actually be more. You could probably sell it for that by itself after a while.
Speaking of action figures, the Nika new Halloween figures,
yeah,
are being promoted. I've seen some pictures. Unfortunately, cool. Nika is making some of the same mistakes that Mattel has made in the past,
which has
spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers in the action figures.
Yeah, I did notice that with the face.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Some spoilers in the action figures. In fact, there's always been a lot of issues with toy lines and films, and the toy lines hitting the promo market sometimes months before the film, and because they're trying to show you what they've got planned, and those action figure lines usually are planned throughout the first 6 months of the movie release.
Yeah.
So it's the initial release and then 6 months forward, and then they start releasing second and third waves for the collectibles. Many a times we have seen Star Wars spoilers, actually, through releasing shots of the action figures.
I remember just being completely pissed off about, oh, yeah, that's actually, I know exactly. That, I didn't want to know that yet.
Well, you know, you remember Godzilla when it was coming out, what, 98, I think?
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to keep that a secret, and so you couldn't see the toy or anything about the toy. And I worked at a Suncoast at the time where we'd get those in, and I think if I remember right, we weren't allowed to put them out on the shelf until a certain date because they didn't want you to know what Godzilla looked like until you saw the movie.
Well, speaking of Godzilla, the last time that we had to talk about before we head into the second hour with John Bristol and his movie Head is... I will say, out of everything that has come out, we didn't get to spend any time on Invader Zim. That's fine. I love Invader Zim. 2-hour movie. That's right. Too. Well, we got to have something for next week's podcast.
That's right.
But right now, one thing that impressed me the most out of the trailers that have come out over the last week, especially out of Comic-Con, I loved the Godzilla King of the Monsters trailer.
I did too.
I did not expect, first of all, I did not expect that many reveals. I thought we were going to get one major creature reveal. That's what I thought they were going to give us. Yeah. I thought they were going to tease. Because this is still almost a year out. It's May 2019.
Sorry. So 9 months, roughly.
I didn't think there was any way we were going to get more than one huge reveal. And we got three major monster reveals from the King of the Monsters trailer. Mm-hmm. Rodan is always a safe bet. It's a staple. I did not expect to see us get a glimpse of King Ghidorah.
Uh-huh.
That was the one that really surprised me, mm-hmm. because as far as the kaiju creatures and the Godzilla universe, that's the heavy hitter.
Oh, yeah.
King Ghidorah has always been the heavy hitter. And then, of course, there have been rumors since the sequel got greenlit that we were going to see Mothra.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting. And it'll be interesting, too, to see what take they're going to have on Mothra.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mothra's always been a rather heroic monster in the Godzilla films.
Now, I just saw the trailer and just caught something briefly. Well, there's a scene of, like, isn't there... I'm guessing, I don't know, it looked like Gamera, where they're like, it's like the head of the monster comes up. It's not any of the other monsters. So is it Gamera? I mean,
right. It's either going to be, because Muto,
okay,
which was the one they came up with for the first Godzilla movie, mm-hmm. was a completely new creature.
Right.
If they're going to throw one in there, it wouldn't surprise me,
mm-hmm.
Especially with how many new creatures we got for Skull Island, Kong Skull Island. But it also would surprise me at this point if we did see Gamera. I can't believe that those are the only three creatures we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
If they're giving us these three creatures that early, and with that much of a reveal for the first full official trailer, I gotta believe there's more.
Yeah.
I gotta believe that, and this was a huge reveal. As far as a first official trailer is, man, there was a lot going on in that trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that although it's a direct continuation, I think they realized that maybe Aaron Johnson's character from the first film wasn't enough to build a sequel around.
Right.
And I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
I am fine with that. We don't necessarily need those characters again. Those characters don't always have to be on the front line for every film. Mm-hmm. We can move on to different characters and how they interact with the universe. And I think that's kind of a cool thing.
I do too. It's a different perspective.
So, as far as what we've got this week, really impressed by Godzilla King of the Monsters. first trailer, I think, looks pretty cool. We got tons of new releases coming out, including Starman. Thanks, everybody, for sticking around for the first hour. Next hour, we have John Bristol with Head, which you still have to see.
I do. I want to see that.
It is pretty awesome. And I think once you hear Bristol talk about the production, about his love for horror films, and his love for puppet films, which is pretty awesome that he was able to combine those two things, you're going to get excited enough that you really do want to see that film. And I suggest seeing it because it is a lot of fun.
I'm going to see it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.